Trump knocks Cruz out of the race with a blowout in Indiana. This hour, how will the GOP come to terms with Trump as their nominee? Politics Wednesday edition of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. The Republican National Committee now declares Trump the presumptive nominee. We'll also ask our analysts this hour, Dave Anderson of Iowa State University and Tim Hagel of the University of Iowa, how Trump as the presumptive nominee changes the Democratic presidential race. We'll also ask Iowa Christian conservative leader Bob Vanderplaats, an early Cruz backer, what it will take for him to support Donald Trump. Cruz and Kasich backers, are you now on board the Trump train? Join our discussion. First, this news. Politics Wednesday edition of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer, and whoa, what a politics day it is in the news. And we're so glad to have Tim Hagel with us of the University of Iowa, where he's associate professor of political science in our Iowa City studio. Hello, Tim.
Hey there.
Dave Anderson with us in our Ames studio, assistant professor of political science at Iowa State University. Dave, glad to have you on board on this landmark day in the nomination process, we have to say.
Glad to be here.
Let's catch up with last night. We have news just in from the last hour or so about John Kasich, but Ted Cruz suspending his campaign last night in Indiana after losing the primary to Donald Trump.
From the beginning, I've said that I would continue on as long as there was a viable path to victory. Tonight, I'm sorry to say, it appears that path has been foreclosed. Together, we left it all on the field in Indiana. We gave it everything we've got. But the voters chose another path. And so, with a heavy heart, but with boundless optimism for the long-term future of our nation, we are suspending our campaign.
And in rare form, Donald Trump complimented Ted Cruz in his victory speech from last night.
I have to tell you that I've competed all my life, competitive person. All my life, I've been in competitions, different competitions, whether it's sports or business or now for 10 months, politics. And I have to tell you that I have met some of the most incredible competitors that I have ever competed against right here on the Republican Party. You know, we started off with that 17 number. And just so you understand, Ted Cruz, I don't know if he likes me or if he doesn't like me, but he is one hell of a competitor. He is a tough, smart guy. And he has got an amazing future. He's got an amazing future. So I want to congratulate Ted. And I know how tough it is. It's tough.
Okay. Donald Trump yesterday declaring victory in Indiana, now being named the presumptive Republican nominee by the Republican Party. Let's get your initial reactions to this. Tim Hagel, we started out with 16 or 17. Now there's one left standing, Donald Trump, here on May 4th of this election year.
Yeah, may the 4th be with you and all of that, right? had to get that one in. Well, it is. It's amazing that as many people have already said today that a year ago when people are thinking about, oh, Donald Trump's going to get into the race, this was not seen as being a serious possibility. And yet with 17 people in a very strong field in terms of senators and governors and very qualified people, they all dropped out one by one. And as we saw today, Cruz last night and Kasich today, Trump is the remaining person. He's still needs to get the 1237 pledged delegates, but there seems to be no possibility that he won't get those delegates before the convention. So, yes, he's basically going to be the GOP nominee at this point.
Dave Anderson, it seems that Republicans who opposed Trump misunderstood their own party. We were led to understand that as the Republican field dwindled in size, they expected a majority of the party to rally around a single rival. That didn't happen. Why not, Dave?
That's the question that we're going to be asking for years to come, I think. Most of what we know about political campaigns and presidential campaigns just didn't happen this year. This is an election for the ages, and Donald Trump has done something that I don't think many people at all expected we would see this year.
Mm-hmm. Where does this, to you, Dave, also, where does this leave the Never Trump movement?
The Never Trump movement is in a very tough position right now. It has to figure out what it wants to do. It still is very concerned with the down ballot races and how Republican candidates for the Senate and the House and state elective office are going to do. And they would like to do something to support those candidates. But I don't think anyone has a clear answer as to what the best path forward is.
Mm-hmm. Tim Hagel, do you have a clear answer?
I wish I did. No real clear answer. But the concern for the Never Trump folks is, in some respect, in some conservative circles, is that they really think in terms of foreign policy, and usually this is something a little bit more important for the Republican Party than the Democrats, at least in terms of their discussions, that Trump is too much of a wild card, that he would be less of a steady hand in the foreign policy area than Hillary Clinton would. Even if they don't necessarily like Hillary Clinton's foreign policy, she thinks that she wouldn't be as unpredictable as well, just leave it at that, than Trump would. And for that reason, that some of them are actually suggesting that they would vote for Hillary Clinton. Now, of course, the alternative is if they say, well, maybe a third party candidate or something like that, or just not vote for president, that still would tend to throw the election to Hillary Clinton, but not necessarily force them to actually vote for.
Yeah, talk a little bit more about what you just mentioned. Even Charles Koch, whose family has spent millions battling Clinton and other Democrats, said recently it was possible Clinton would be a more palatable alternative than Trump. Just yesterday, a longtime John McCain advisor, Mark Salter, threw his backing behind Clinton in a tweet. So I guess the question, Dave, here is, and how many Republicans do these examples represent?
I think estimates right now are that it maybe is anywhere between 25% to 40% of Republicans are really stuck with this bind of figuring out if they want to support Donald Trump as their nominee, which makes the presidential election just nightmarish for Republican campaign strategists. Usually you would anticipate a party can hold on to somewhere between 90% and 95% of its partisan supporters. And with Donald Trump, it may be in the 80s or even maybe in the 70s. It's really, really difficult to figure out how you win an election with that kind of number.
Mm-hmm. John Kasich evidently dropping out officially later today, according to press reports. This was a moderate voice who tried to portray himself as the adult in the room, but failed to win any state but his own home state of Ohio. Tim Hagel, why no real traction here for John Kasich?
Well, the answer sort of goes back to the question we were talking about before in terms of consolidating behind a particular candidate. And Kasich really came in late, didn't have the ground game that he needed, particularly here in Iowa, where he really didn't compete particularly. He put his emphasis on New Hampshire, did okay there. But then, as you said, he only won his own home state of Ohio. In fact, he still ended up being in fourth place behind Rubio, who dropped out much earlier. And Kasich, at the point when he got in and sort of was the race had narrowed, especially down to those last three competitors, he just wasn't resonating with people anymore. And this was the year of the outsider, and he was seen as too much of a establishment type candidate, even though he was polling well against Hillary Clinton and seemed to be the adult in the room. Let me go back quickly to one thing Dave was saying as far as the problem that the Republicans face as to whether they'll actually support Trump in the end. The one good thing, one good thing about Cruz and Kasich dropping out now is it gives an extra 5 weeks, 5 weeks being with the time of the June 7th primaries, for the Republican Party to consolidate. And so I think a lot of people that may be in that Never Trump movement or Stop Trump or something like that will have a little extra time. They'll see what Trump does, and maybe some of those folks will come around. But the point is still the same, which is that, well, how many of those will come around and how many of them will actually say, well, I just can't do it?
Okay. That's the question we want to reach out to our listeners with this hour. Republicans, conservative voters, Cruz and Kasich supporters. What now? Where does your support go? Are you willing to back Donald Trump? Join our conversation, 1-866-780-9100. Do you feel yourself in a bind? Perhaps not if you supported Donald Trump all along, but what if you were a Ted Cruz or a John Kasich supporter? What are your thoughts now? We'd like to have you share them with us on this Politics Wednesday edition of River to River, 1-866-780-9100, River to River at iowapublicradio.org, our email. Tweet us at IPR Talk or find Iowa Public Radio on Facebook to leave a comment or a question there. Well, talking of people in a bind, I spoke with one such person a little while ago, earlier today. Bob Vanderplaats is president of the Christian conservative group The Family Leader. And if we remember, he was an early backer, not his group, but himself, an early backer of Ted Cruz. Cruz, of course, edged out Donald Trump in the Iowa caucuses by, I think, 3 or 4 percentage points. I spoke with him earlier about where he finds himself now. Bob Vanderplaats, welcome to the program.
Well, it's good to be with you.
Well, we want to talk with you, of course, because you were an early backer, your organization, an early backer of Ted Cruz's candidacy. Cruz edged out Trump in the Iowa caucuses. What now? What are you telling your supporters?
Yeah. Well, what we're doing is we're taking a deep breath. We backed a great candidate in Ted Cruz, someone that really championed, you know, our values, principled conservative values and pro-family values. So we're thrilled to support Ted Cruz. And we're probably as surprised as anybody last night when, Ted Cruz said he was going to suspend his campaign. So we met already this morning, and we said, you know, we're just going to take a deep breath. I know Donald Trump. He's been a friend of mine for the past 5-6 years. And I look forward to visiting with Mr. Trump in regards to potentially supporting his candidacy.
Mm-hmm. So that's a potential for the future. Can you picture yourself and your group backing Trump in light of his controversial, his disparaging remarks about certain groups, his positions that don't always align with the values that you espouse?
Well, that's why I look forward to having a conversation with Mr. Trump. It's because there's a lot of things that he said on the campaign trail. There's a lot of things about his background that, quite frankly, we don't embrace and we don't support. And so when we're going to back a leader, especially a leader for president, we want to know what we're getting. And I believe Mr. Trump will honor that with an audience, and we'll have a chance to have that visit. But as we've told our supporters from day one, our vision is much greater than 2016. We really believe in cultural transformation, spiritual revival. And if that happens, we will impact elections with the right leaders. We will influence policy that's according to God's heart. And we'll be a model for others to follow. So we're actually just refocusing and resetting where we've always been as a ministry.
Mm-hmm. Is it possible after your conversation with Donald Trump, and let's say you're not satisfied with what he how he reacts to the questions you have for him, is it possible that the Family Leader will not back the GOP nominee?
Well, the Family Leader, first of all, as an organization, we didn't even back Ted Cruz. The Family Leader stayed neutral. I backed Ted Cruz. And the same will be the case, I'm sure, in the general election with Donald Trump. The Family Leader will stay neutral. We consider ourselves a standard bearer. It would be my endorsement that he's probably looking for, and that what we're probably, you know, interested in giving if conversations go well. If that doesn't happen, Ben, you know, then what we do is we just stay focused on our ministry. We engage a lot of churches. We have a vibrant ministry. And we still have till November to make up our mind. I can guarantee you I will not be going into a voting booth to vote for Hillary Clinton.
Why not?
Well, she just she basically opposes everything that we stand for. And I think even what she says about the appointment of Supreme Court justices, we would never embrace that. Her vision is quite different from what our vision is. And so Hillary Clinton will not be somebody that we'll support. And we'll see if I want to actively engage and endorse and support Donald Trump. And the other part is the race may not even be set yet. In America, we have a lot of freedoms, and one of the freedoms is you don't have to run on a party. So there could be a candidate, and I've heard rumblings that there may be somebody emerge as an independent. And if that person has a legitimate shot and somebody that represents our values that we think, you know, we could get behind, or that I could get behind, then we might do that as well.
Mm-hmm. So it's the possibility of a Republican running as a third-party candidate, a conservative that has not yet been named yet, this late in the game.
Well, I think so. I mean, there's always that possibility. And you have a convention in Cleveland yet, where most of the delegates that are going to be in Cleveland are going to be Cruz delegates. So I'm saying there's a lot of things that just haven't settled yet. So I think for anybody to be stepping out, especially somebody in my position who was a national co-chair for Cruz and all in for Cruz, and the morning after the election is over to say, I'm all in now for the opponent that I really don't embrace, I think it's okay to take a deep breath. Western civilization does not hinge on whether I say I endorse Trump today or not.
Mm-hmm. What do you make of the fact that exit polls in Indiana and other primary states told us that a large number of evangelical Christians like yourself supported Trump over Cruz? How do you explain that?
Well, I think it's an easy explanation, is that evangelicals are no different than, you know, the typical American. They have a belief system, but they're also equally as frustrated with Washington, D.C. And if Donald Trump did one thing very effectively in this campaign, he has tapped into an emotion of the American people. They don't believe D.C. is working. They believe D.C. has been hijacked. It's manipulated by big money and lobbyists and scratch each other's back. And so I think something that's appealing about Donald Trump is that he says, hey, I'm my own man. I'm not being bought by anybody. I don't need their money. All those types of things, I think, has drawn people in. And sometimes, you know, even evangelicals are saying, you know, we just need to change direction because the direction we're in is not working. So to me, it's more of an emotional reaction of saying something's got to be different, and maybe that something is Donald Trump.
Mm-hmm. Before we go, let me ask you, when you meet with Donald Trump, what are the one or two things you have to hear from him in order for him to have your support?
Well, first and foremost is who is he going to surround himself with? Who's his vice presidential pick going to be? That's going to be the first indicator on a Trump presidency of who is he going to surround himself with, because you can tell a lot about a leader by who they put around themselves. But two is, you know, the Supreme Court is very important to us. We have a runaway judiciary today. We see it in the state of Iowa. We see it across the country, where anything that could never get passed through a legislature or through Congress is getting just shoved down our throats through a court, which was never their role. So what we're going to look at, you know, who are you thinking? What are you thinking? What's the makeup of a person that you would put to the Supreme Court? And we're just looking for a constitutional justice, someone who really embraces the Constitution and all of its meaning and understands the separation of powers. So those are the things that we're going to be looking for out of Mr. Trump in regards to his candidacy and to his potential leadership for the country.
Bob Vanderplaats of the Family Leader, thank you very much for this conversation.
Thank you, Ben. God bless you.
That conversation recorded a little bit earlier today. It's a Politics Wednesday edition of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer with Dave Anderson of Iowa State University and Tim Hagel of the University of Iowa, our political analysts this week. I'd like to have you join our conversation, 1-866-780-9100. The latest news, Ted Cruz out, John Kasich apparently out, leaving only Donald Trump standing in the GOP column as a presidential nominee. Your reaction, your questions, 1-866-780-9100. Let me turn to Dave Anderson here. First of all, listening to Bob Vanderplaats there, the national co-chair for Ted Cruz, mentioning that he is not ruling out a third party, an independent conservative candidate entering the race. How likely, realistic is that?
That is a great question. That was a really, really good interview where I think Mr. Vanderplaats laid out the big challenges that we're looking at right now. He said clearly he couldn't vote for Hillary, but an independent presidential bid would be appealing. And that is akin to saying the Republican Party throws away any shot at the presidency, which I can't remember the last time we've seen that happen to a party. If the electorate is divided among three candidates, it's really the party that's most unified that always wins, mm-hmm. and that would be the Democrats. Mm-hmm. But an independent presidential bid, I think is appealing to a lot of Republicans right now who want to go out and vote for a president that they really believe in. And as Mr. Vanderplaat said, there are some questions he has about Donald Trump. And a lot of Republican voters are not going to get the opportunity to sit in a room with him and ask candid questions and are just loath to go out to the polls to support him. I think there should be some Republicans on the sidelines thinking about, well, is this the best thing not only for me but for the party to launch a presidential bid? And see if I can just energize the base.
Mm-hmm. Tim Hagel, is there any precedent for such a launch of a third party, an independent conservative?
Yeah, it's been a while. Teddy Roosevelt, of course, did his Bull Moose Party,
over
100 years. So, which then effectively through the election to Woodrow Wilson. And you could even make a case that to a certain extent, when Ross Perot ran in 92 and 96, it wasn't exactly a split of one particular party, but it drew enough of the Republican vote away that through the election to Bill Clinton both of those years. And you could even say to a certain extent the 2000 election when Ralph Nader ran. Of course, it was the Green Party, but he was pulling away a lot of liberal votes from the Democrats. And although it didn't affect most of the states, it did have the effect in Florida that the 60,000 votes that Nader got were enough to keep the election from Gore in that state and ultimately in the Electoral College.
Mm-hmm. Interesting, too, that this now, as of this date, we have a lot of Republicans having sort of a day of reckoning, aren't they? Elected officials, party leaders, all the way down to local levels have deferred this day of reckoning because, well, I even spoke yesterday with the Iowa House Majority Leader, Chris Hagenow. I asked him finally, I said, you know, do you support Donald Trump? It looks an awful lot like he's going to be the nominee. He said he'd withhold comment until the GOP has a nominee. Well, ask him that question today. He doesn't have the same answer. He can't have that same answer. So the repercussions, Dave Anderson, throughout many levels of the GOP are at hand.
Yes, they have to be worried about turnout right now. Usually in a presidential election, we see turnout surge because people love being a part of the process of voting for president. But when you don't have a presidential candidate you care about or like or have any energy for, the Republican Party has got to be afraid that their voters just are going to stay home. And if they stay home, there's going to be lots of down ballot results where the Republicans are swept out of maybe the Senate, maybe out of the House, maybe out of state offices.
Mm-hmm. Or how about this? Kay Henderson of Radio Iowa mentioned this yesterday as a possibility. She's been talking with people at the State House who are afraid of a Trump candidacy because they just don't know who these voters are. These are some new people perhaps coming in to vote after many years of not voting. She says many Republicans at lower levels, elected officials, are afraid they will go into the ballot box and check one box, Donald Trump, and then walk away.
Yeah. That's a real concern.
Okay. We have about a minute left. Tim Hagel, before we go to break.
Yeah, just real quickly, we've been focusing on the Republican side of things, but that problem of a lack of enthusiasm and people not turning out is something that could affect the Democrats, too. We'll have to see to the extent to which any of the Bernie Sanders supporters are unwilling to vote for Clinton. The numbers there aren't as high as they are in the Republican side, but there probably are going to be some. So we'll have to see what that difference is between the two parties that they can't support their main candidates. But the difference for the Democrats is that they have a much stronger ground game. Hillary Clinton has been at this. She understands the process. We saw that here in Iowa, although it was a very close race here in Iowa, where you saw the Clinton ground game versus the Sanders enthusiasm. And that's going to be the key, is that in the next 2.5 months, Trump's got to get his ground game together or else he doesn't have a chance.
Tim Hagel with us of the University of Iowa. Dave Anderson of Iowa State University looking at the latest developments, how this shakes out. We'll concentrate more in the second half hour on the Democratic side. Of course, Bernie Sanders with a slight upset there in Indiana. We'll ask our analysts how this may change the picture, if it does, and perhaps how having a nominee apparently in the Republican side may change the Democratic nominee or race. That's when we come back. Join our conversation, 1-866-780-9100. I'm Ben Kiefer with Dave Anderson and Tim Hagel, Politics Wednesday on this edition of River to River. And we're back midstream in this edition of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Politics Wednesday, a momentous day for the Republican nominating process for their presidential candidate. The presumptive nominee as of today, or was it late yesterday, Donald Trump. Ted Cruz out. Apparently John Kasich also out. We'll hear officially later today. What's your reaction to that as a Republican who perhaps didn't support Trump? Are you willing to get on the Trump train. Now, 1-866-780-9100. In just a minute, we'll also talk a little bit about Bernie Sanders' upset in Indiana and where that leaves the Democratic race. Let's go to Tom in Des Moines. Tom, you're on the air. Dave Anderson with us of Iowa State University and Tim Hagel of the University of Iowa. What's your question?
Yes, hello, Ben. I just wanted to offer my theory of what's going on with the Republicans. The party has, to put it in Vander Plaats' terms, reaped or sowed the wind and reaped the whirlwind. The wind that they have sown is this idea that voters are victims of their government. And thus, the Republican Party has been encouraging this for many years, for their base to believe this, and they've encouraged this small government philosophy that the less government, the better, as if, you know, our government doesn't represent the will and the needs of the American people. We are in a democracy, but the Republicans seem to unite behind this idea that we're victims. All of us are victims of the government, and that we need to do something about it. Always do, you know, overthrow the bad guys and put in some new guys.
Mm-hmm.
And Donald Trump is the epitome of that voice. And as Vander Plaats was saying, you know, we can unite behind we, the Republican Party, and I'm not a Republican, I'm a Democrat, but the Republican Party can unite behind him because that's the one thing that he represents for all of them, is
mm-hmm.
that government, you know, is the bad guy, and we are victims of the government.
Hmm. Tom, good observation from Des Moines. Dave, what do you think of that? Reaping this whirlwind, what has been sown by the Republican Party, according to Tom in Des Moines?
I think there's a lot of truth to that. The Republican Party for probably about 30 years now has been increasingly skeptical of government, skeptical of the media, skeptical of academia. They just don't like a lot of places where authority tends to congregate. And when you continually do that, I think you run the risk of kind of appealing to demagoguery. Donald Trump comes out of nowhere. He has no political background. He has no governing experience. If you listen to him on the campaign trail, he doesn't really talk about what he's going to do as president except in the vaguest of terms. And I think this resonates right now within the party, who is looking for an outsider. But there are some kind of scary consequences of that if you take it to the extreme.
Mm-hmm. James is joining us from Des Moines. James, I see on my screen you were a Kasich supporter. What now?
Yeah, that's true. I was in support of Kasich really early on in the campaign. I caucused for Kasich in my hometown, but yeah, as of yesterday, it looks like I'm going to have to throw my support behind Trump. And you know, I've got my reservations, but you know, it's better than the alternative.
Okay, what are your greatest reservations about Donald Trump?
Well. I mean, he's got this isolationist view of global foreign policy. He wants to basically withdraw us from, you know, from our organizations like NATO and, you know, our foreign partnerships with all these different nations, you know, if they don't pay into our military
right.
system and whatnot. And, you know, it seems like he's got these ideas that just he wants to destabilize our alliances with these other nations and just sort of draw everything back to the homeland, you know?
Right. But I think there are contradictory remarks from Donald Trump about that, whether that's actually the case. When he's pressed on certain points, he'll go in an opposite direction, Tim Hagel.
Yeah. One of the things that's been amazing about Trump is that he can reverse field on a dime, and it doesn't seem to matter to his supporters, and it doesn't seem to affect his support overall, or he doesn't get
right.
chastised in the media quite as much for it as anybody else would. But the problem, as this caller was sort of saying, is that when you're talking as the president, you're talking to where world leaders are listening to you, that they take that stuff seriously. And so you can't make those kinds of offhand comments. Or seemingly so. We'll see
right.
if Trump gets away with it.
Right. Remember, how many previous elections has flip-flopper been a key word that has downed or burdened many candidates? Let's talk about the Democratic side here with Tim Hagel of the University of Iowa, Dave Anderson. I want to thank James in Des Moines for that call and that observation. Bernie Sanders making a slight upset in Indiana. Dave, do you happen to know how much this will actually mean in the delegate count, how many net he wins out of this?
Out of Indiana?
Yeah, Indiana. It's in the single digits, if anything, right?
Yeah, it really didn't help him much at all. In fact, I think it's interesting to turn to the Democratic side, because if you look at the numbers, even with Cruz and Kasich dropping out, Trump can't clinch the nomination until the June 7th primaries. Hillary Clinton actually technically can. She could become the nominee before Trump does.
Nevertheless, in the upset last night, Senator Sanders narrowly winning that primary over Hillary Clinton. He said last night he'll keep campaigning until the California primary.
Let me just take this opportunity to thank the people of Indiana for giving us a great upset victory tonight. I know all the pundits thought we were supposed to lose, but that apparently was not what the people of Indiana concluded. I understand that Secretary Clinton thinks that this campaign is over. I've got some bad news for her. Tonight, we won a great victory in Indiana. Next week, we're going to be in West Virginia. We think we have a real shot to win in that great state. Then we're going to Kentucky and we're going to Oregon. We think we have a pretty good chance to win there as well. And then we're going to another bunch of other states, culminating in the largest state in the United States with the most delegates, and that is the state of California. And we think we have a pretty good chance to win there.
Okay. Dave Anderson, let me put it to you. Bernie Sanders, what can he have for goals now? Is he mathematically eliminated from clinching a nomination in the wildest dreams about the coming primaries? And I think that the coming states are pretty favorable to Bernie Sanders, aren't they?
No, actually, I'll disagree with that.
Okay.
I don't think they are very favorable because Bernie does best when he has caucuses and when he has open primaries. He really appeals to high-energy voters and to independents who want to come in and influence the Democratic Party nomination process. But as we move forward, we're almost always in primaries, and they're usually closed. So this is Democratic voters who I think that benefits Hillary. And going forward, Bernie is not mathematically eliminated. He can still win the nomination, but he has to win something like 65% of the vote in order to catch up to Hillary. And then the logic is that if he can do this and he'll catch up to her in the pledged delegate count, then maybe the superdelegates will change their mind and cascade over to him, which it is technically possible. The likelihood of it is almost zero.
Mm-hmm. Suzanne is joining us from Grinnell. Suzanne, you're interested in the Democratic side of the equation. Are you a Bernie Sanders supporter? Suzanne in Grinnell, are you there? Can't hear Suzanne. Perhaps she can hear us. I'm sorry about that, Suzanne. Well, Tim Hagel, your observations now. This is the 17th win by Bernie Sanders of the primary, but still Hillary Clinton, I believe, ahead of where Barack Obama was in 2008 when he faced Hillary Clinton.
Yeah, it's Bernie Sanders has an uphill battle, but the fact that he does keep winning these states, and of course the fact that the Democrats have proportional delegate allocation, allows him to stay in the race and not sort of be effectively eliminated or mathematically eliminated any earlier. And at this point, and he's kind of said, hinted at this a little bit himself too, is that he's kind of the movement candidate, the revolution candidate, and wants to influence the party going forward, whether it's at the convention in terms of things like platform or the rules or something of that nature, or just generally the direction that he sees the party going forward, even though, as you know, Clinton supporters in particular argue, that he hasn't been a Democrat very long. And so, but what his vision is much broader than just a particular party, the progressive nature of his policies. And so he wants to stay in the race for that purpose and it, at the very least, give the people that would support him a voice in that process.
Mm-hmm. I'm looking at an NBC News survey, a News Monkey poll released yesterday. This is before the results of the Indiana primary, where the majority of Democrats say Bernie Sanders should stay in the race through the party's national convention in Philadelphia in July. 57% of Democrats polled here say he should stay in the race until the summer nominating event. Only a quarter, 25%, say he should drop out after the last votes are cast on June 14th, 16% said he should drop now. So, but I wonder, and I wonder if you wonder, Dave Anderson, if now with the GOP perhaps unifying behind a candidate and having a lead, so to speak, in the general election campaign, whether you think there will be more of a coalescence behind Hillary Clinton? Do you think that makes Bernie Sanders supporters nervous?
I don't think Bernie Sanders supporters are too nervous about this. I don't think anyone really expects Bernie Sanders to drop out before the end of the primary season is over. He's going to stick it out. The question I think that everyone's thinking about right now is, what is going to be the tone of this campaign? Mm-hmm. Now that Donald Trump is clearly going to get the nomination, he is going to turn and start attacking Hillary every day, all day. And if Bernie Sanders is still doing this from within the Democratic Party, it's going to put a lot of pressure on Hillary Clinton. We still have about 4 more weeks in the primary voting, and then we have another 5 weeks until we get to the conventions, and then we have 4 more months of this campaign that just never seems to end.
Mm-hmm. So how does Hillary thread the needle here? Is she doing a good job so far?
I don't really think she is doing a great job right now. Her campaign has not had a lot of energy. That's been a constant complaint about it. It does not seem to be innovative. It's not really energizing the base. It just has this feeling of inevitability behind it. And she's going to have to overcome this at some point. In some ways, I think having the challenge of Bernie Sanders is good for Hillary because it's forcing her to continually campaign and to be on top of her game, and that will get her ready for the general election.
Mm-hmm. Now, Tim Hagel, you're nodding your head yes.
I am. That's one of the things I always say, is that it's good to have a primary competitor because it gets those political and campaign muscles in shape. The one problem, though, for Hillary Clinton is that she's already been accused of being pulled to the left quite far because of Bernie Sanders. And the longer she's unable to pivot back to the center on some topics because Sanders is still in the race, that could potentially hurt her in the general election.
Scott is joining us from Des Moines. Scott dialed 1-866-780-9100. Looks like you want to talk more about the Republican development. Scott, welcome to the program.
Thanks. Thanks for having me on. There was something that Bob Vanderplatz had mentioned that actually brought to mind. I'm very firmly kind of in the never Trump category, I guess. I caucus for Rubio and actually was very supportive of him and don't see myself ever supporting Trump, with one exception. And that would be, is if he came out and actively said, I will likely nominate Cruz for a position on the Supreme Court if elected. That may actually, from my standpoint, be enough to sway me to pull the lever for him while I'm holding my nose, at least in doing so.
Mm-hmm.
But I thought it was interesting that Vanderplatz brought that up.
Right. Bob Vanderplatz, a family leader, saying, who will Trump surround himself with? And Donald Trump this morning on early morning TV talk shows and so forth, being quizzed and talking about how he's vetting vice presidential picks there. Dave Anderson, so can you figure out now who would be a good – I mean, what sort of person? Would it be a Christian evangelical like a Ted Cruz, a woman? What would help Donald Trump firm up some of the support that he needs?
Well, all the suggestions you give are good ones, and in the traditional sense of picking a vice presidential nominee, you would guess he would go for somebody that would kind of strengthen an area he's weak in. Political experience would seem to be a must. He doesn't have elected experience. You would hope the vice president has been in Washington, so understands the system. Being a minority or a woman would help because Donald Trump is not doing well with those groups. And being from a critical state would be ideal because the Republican Party needs to win certain states, namely Florida, Ohio. So if you could find a minority woman evangelical Christian from Florida, that would be a great nominee.
Okay.
Unfortunately, there aren't many.
Okay. Wally with us from Bradford. Or did you have a name to throw out there, Tim Hagel?
Florida Attorney General, I think, is it Pam Bondi? Whatever her first name is, I'm blanking on it right now. But her name came up. I don't know how serious it was, but somebody had mentioned that. But a woman from Florida, at least.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Wally with us from Bradford. Wally, we're coming up to the end of our show. What are your thoughts?
Well, one of your guests touched on it just briefly a moment ago. If we could leapfrog ahead to November, I would like your guest's input on whether or not Trump's sort of wild card clear the decks consideration will affect what we commonly understand to be electoral reality. Texas will always be considered a Republican stronghold, and a normal Republican can get all the Texas electoral votes. California is routinely and consistently Democrat. It boils down to what one of your guests just said, Florida and some of the swing states. There are far fewer than 50 states that actually hang in the balance. Many are foregone conclusion that they'll go either Republican or Democrat. Does Trump's candidacy and his crazy effect on the polls change that, or is it politics as usual in the Electoral College?
Oh, I love that question, Wally. Trump has jolted everything out of its usual sort here. Dave Anderson, what do you think about that? We pundits, experts, political analysts have gotten it wrong up to this point. Can we even talk about swing states with Donald Trump in the race?
Sure. I think there's two possibilities that really stand out in my mind. The conventional wisdom suggests that a Trump candidacy may tip the calendar in or the vote in favor of Hillary Clinton and the Democratic Party to the tune of maybe 400 Electoral College votes. It could be just a landslide victory for the Democratic Party, especially if there's a third-party nominee from the Republican side. There is always the wild card chance, though. Donald Trump has never done anything predictable. He still has not really spent any money from his campaign. He's relied on about $2 billion of free media, and he really has not given many hard and fast policy stances. Who's to say that he may suddenly come out with very liberal-sounding policy stances as the Republican nominee and just capture huge portions of the electorate? It's not likely, but at this point, I try to always hedge my bets with Donald Trump.
Let's finish up with a few comments about the current president in his final months of his administration, in his final White House correspondence dinner speech that was given Saturday night, right? I did watch it, but I don't recall what night. President Obama ended his speech by literally dropping the mic, but before he did that, he made a few quips about the Republican Party.
Meanwhile, on the Republican side, things are a little more, how shall we say this, a little more loose. Just look at the confusion over the invitations to tonight's dinner. Guests were asked to check whether they wanted steak or fish, but instead, a whole bunch of you wrote in Paul Ryan. That's not an option, people. Steak or fish. You may not like steak or fish, but that's your choice.
Okay. In his final White House correspondence dinner speech as president of Barack Obama. Interestingly enough, a comment on this before we say goodbye here from our political analysts. Obama's approval rating hitting a three-year high, 53%, according to a Gallup poll. Also in that poll, a staggering 66% approval rating among voters 18 to 29 years old. Obama's approval rating dropped down to 40% just 18 months ago during that midterm election cycle. That means a 13-point surge over the last year and a half. Tim Hagel, can you imagine why?
Well, you know, sometimes towards the end of a president's second term in particular, folks are getting tired, they're getting anxious for a change and so forth. And that's in particular why Republicans initially were very hopeful for gaining the White House this election, maybe less so, at least in some parts now. But in Obama's case, I mean, the administration makes the case that the economy, although it's not as good as they would like it to have been in terms of the recovery, it has been slow and steady, and it's not maybe horrible, although, which is kind of an odd argument because you hear the candidates talking about how horrible it is in terms of jobs and so forth. So it's a real mixed message, but I think that there's certain aspects to it that come across well, and so we're seeing a bit of an upswing on the part of the popularity for Obama, and that unless something really dreadful happens in the next 6 months, that probably will be sustained.
Especially when we compare this three-year high, this 53% approval rating for President Obama currently. Compare that, Dave Anderson, with our previous two-term president, leaving office with a 22% approval rating, George W. Bush.
Yes. Barack Obama has had a really good success story of staying at least kind of moderately well-liked, whereas George W. Bush, at the end of his term, faced numerous disasters. We had Katrina. We had the ongoing wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. The economy started souring. Barack Obama's dodging all that. He doesn't have major crises on that level happening right now. We still have foreign policy concerns. There's a lot of unhappiness with the state of the economy and stagnant wages, but it's not at the tenor as it was in 2008.
Mm-hmm. Briefly, Dave, you mentioned this earlier. Expand on that in the next 30 seconds. Wider repercussions of a Trump nominee. Does this give the Democrats a bigger opening to take back the Senate or even the House possibly?
Absolutely. I think the Democratic Party is just salivating at the possibility of taking back the Senate. There are a lot of seats up that the Republican Party has to defend. The Democratic Party is likely to make gains, and it is looking like they're likely to maybe take back the majority. The House is a much different story. They're probably not going to win that, but they could narrow the margin.
Okay, thank you very much. So much to talk about as we follow the political story of the presidential nominations. We're glad to have your expertise on hand. Dave Anderson, Assistant Professor of Political Science at Iowa State University. Tim Hagel, Associate Professor of Political Science at the University of Iowa. Tim and Dave, thank you so much for coming into our studios today.
Welcome.
Thanks for having us.
River to River is produced by Lindsay Moon, Emily Woodbury, and Claire Roth. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. River to River is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.